Fortunately, financial impact is tied to environmental impact. The more solar I install, the better for the planet, the more money I make. It just happens to be like a direct correlation. I can't work in something that I don't care about. Like, that was painfully obvious in my first job in the finance industry. I really liked Excel. I really liked financial analysis. I literally remember sitting in the stairwell, like talking to a mentor, a friend of mine, just like, is this what life is, where you just hate your job for 8 hours a day for the rest of your life? I was young. It was like my first job out of college. And I couldn't believe that's what the next 60 years of my life were going to be. And so I just deliberately decided I want to do whatever I can to align my professional life with what I have passions for. And that's, you know, the outdoors, protecting the outdoors. And fortunately, it worked out.
Welcome, fellow entrepreneurs and goal getters, to Entrepreneurial Elevation, Unleashing Greatness Within, with yourself, with myself, your host, Kelly Beveridge, and my guest today, Owen Barrett, who's currently residing in Park City, Utah. We were just talking about how beautiful it is up there. He's up there with his two kiddos, teaching them how to ski and snowboard, and his wife. And just really excited to talk to Owen today. I was telling him, I'm excited to learn from him. It's why I love my podcast so much. I haven't had anybody come on and speak about what we're going to be talking about today. So, Owen, I'm just going to introduce you before I bring you on and give you credit where credit's due. So I would like to say that you are an energy expert turned entrepreneur who's shaken things up in clean technology and the real estate world. After managing $60 million in clean energy projects, you launched a solar company that's helping multifamily buildings go green and generate some serious revenue. We're going to talk all things today, discussing scaling with impact, which I'm really excited to talk about, why deploying existing tech matters more than inventing new stuff. We'll get into that. And how building a business that's good for the planet can also be profitable. And I think that that's a really great message to share. I kind of want the theme to be a little bit about that, building a profitable business that, you know, can also save the planet. I think that's super cool. And just excited to pick your brain. Thanks for being here today.
Yeah, excited to be here. Thanks for having me.
Awesome. Maybe let's start with your journey. I think with your story, it would be a great place to start. Just how did you go from managing energy for a Fortune 500 company to launching multiple ventures in clean energy and real estate and starting your business and being the founder of Shine? So how did that journey begin?
Yeah, I mean, I think it starts even earlier. I think it starts as a kid, you know, being told that you're stubborn. You don't like to listen to authority. And that definitely carried through into my professional life. I just, for better or worse, you know, I have a hard time listening to people telling me to do things if it doesn't make any sense to me. Do this because it's how we've always done it. It's how we'll continue to do it. That message will never resonate with me. And so I quit my corporate cushy job probably a few weeks before I was about to get fired, if I'm being honest. Like, I felt like there was a little bit of tension building up between me and management, because sometimes they'd ask me to do stupid things and I just wouldn't do it. And I think that's a way to not last a long time in corporate America. And so I've always been entrepreneurial. I've always had side hustles, you know, going through college, in grad school, I had a side hustle. I've always just been interested in starting businesses, like figuring out business models, figuring out where is there like customer demand and trying to launch different things. And so after having pretty good success at this corporate job as an energy manager, I quit to start my own company. At the time, it was called Lumio. It was going to be just a lighting company. So this is when LED lights were really taking off. They were replacing incandescents and fluorescents. And I thought it'd be really easy to sell people lighting upgrades to LED, because the economics on lighting upgrades is like the best within the clean technologies ecosystem. So I thought it'd be super easy to start a lighting system. I could not have been further from the truth. I mean, it was the hardest thing I've ever experienced trying to start a company. I had no experience in sales. I didn't know how to sell anything. I didn't really even know how to speak to people. So I went, I think, 18 months without making any revenue. Came super close to having to move back home to my parents, because I was living off my 401k and food stamps. And then I stumbled into this grant opportunity in California, changed the trajectory of Lumio, changed my life. We ended up working with 38 school districts in 18 months hitting and just growing way faster than I ever thought was possible. Sold that company, started investing in multifamily real estate as a limited partner. For the listeners that are not super familiar with multifamily real estate, usually these things are organized through syndications where you have a small group of general partners that kind of identify the opportunity and manage it. But all the equity comes from limited partners, just passive investors. So I started investing passively, noticed really how backwards the industry was when it came to identifying energy as an opportunity rather than just like an expense. And so over 8 years, tried a bunch of different business models to help the multifamily industry increase what's called net operating income, which is like net profit for this industry, via energy projects, specifically on-site solar. And, you know, some worked well, but what we're doing now is work the best. And that's being this turnkey solar solution for the multifamily industry using a software platform that we've developed just because of the intricacies of installing solar on multifamily, which we can get more into if you want.
Yeah, for sure. No, thanks. I have a few questions. First of all, I love your story. This is why I love talking to entrepreneurs, because it's never a straight line, right? It's never a straight line. And, you know, you talk about like your first company 18 months before you even started to see revenue, right? And then you didn't give up when you thought you were going to be living on your parents' couch here pretty soon. And then boom, right? You have something take off. And so I'm just curious, before we move on, because we're talking to a bunch of entrepreneurs who the mindset, I think, sometimes as an entrepreneur is to be able to see our vision, especially when it's not working out for us. So if you go back to that younger version of yourself, I mean, now you've had all this success, all this experience. I'm sure you have a high level of belief that what you put your time into is going to turn into something. But what would you tell those entrepreneurs that are maybe in that space you were at back then, where it's not working out for them, but they believe in what they're doing and wanting to be an entrepreneur?
That's $1 million question. I think you have to have... You have to have an honest conversation with yourself, first of all, right? Like, if it's not working, why is it not working? I knew that the economics, the financials behind lighting upgrades were legit. That's what I had seen in my past corporate job. So I knew it wasn't the service that I was pitching, which sort of made me realize that it must be the person pitching the project, which was me. I didn't know how to get to the customer. I didn't know how to communicate the value prop effectively. And I ultimately started gaining success when I stopped trying to do everything myself and started delegating to, at the time, I didn't have any money to hire anyone. But so I found someone that was really well connected in the industry and I made him kind of like an equity partner, like we shared profit. What I realized really quickly is I'm not good at cold outreach. I can't go, and this is still true to this day. I have a really hard time like picking up the phone and calling someone I don't know and trying to have a conversation. But once that relationship has sort of been started and I get brought in to like have a more in-depth conversation, that's really where I excel. So once I realized what I was good at and what I wasn't good at and where I could sort of outsource what I was not good at, I just started to know it. I just started to see a lot of success. So I think it's, you have to be honest with yourself. What are you good at? What are you not good at? Can you find someone to sort of counterbalance what you're not good at? Because I mean, it's really hard. It takes a long time to get to revenue. Usually it's very hard to do everything well.
Yeah, no, so true. And, you know, and I'm also curious, you know, cause you said you're stubborn and you don't like it when people say this is the way we have to do it. Cause I don't think, if we're speaking of innovation, that squashes innovation right there, big time, right? So yeah. What would you say to entrepreneurs who they have an idea and they have a creative, innovative mindset, yet they get distracted by the voices of others?
Ignore them, right? Like the naysayers out there generally are the people that don't have the balls or don't have whatever it is to go try and do something on their own. Yeah. They're the ones that are going to stay sort of in the rat race their whole life. And it's really easy to tell people their idea is stupid or they shouldn't do it or it's risky or whatever. But America thrives on entrepreneurship. And it's so much easier. If money is your goal, it's a lot easier to make a lot of money through entrepreneurship than it is through a W-2. Yeah, I don't think you could be a successful entrepreneur without being a bit of an asshole. And I think that's okay. Like, I think you're going to upset people. And that's part of the journey.
Yeah, you got to stick to your guns for sure, right? It's how it happens and comes to fruition. And, you know, speaking of that, you've made some bold moves. Like, you've had quite a few pivots, it seems like, in your career as you're out there building. When do you know it's time to evolve and start a new venture?
Man, good question. You're on fire right now. You must do this for a living.
You're easy to talk to. And like I said, I like to ask questions I like to know for myself. So,
I mean, I could talk about the last pivot, like the first pivot from doing energy, like renewable energy and energy efficiency within schools. That was kind of easy. Like the pivot was forced because I exited the company and I thought I was retired. Honestly, I was like, man, I'm late 20s, like financial freedom. I don't need to do anything. And so many people, maybe I'm type A, I don't know, but so many people sort of sit back, try and do nothing. And like, that's when they start to go crazy because they're like, you have to be working on something. And I was the same way. So that pivot into multifamily was easy because it was sort of forced to. The most recent pivot, we were buying multifamily properties to install on-site solar. So the first way I tried to crack into the multifamily industry was starting a consulting company called Value Add Solar. And the idea was like, I'm the solar expert. And I know enough about real estate to try and pitch solar into these multifamily syndications. Let me just consult and help these owners and operators do it on their projects. And what I realized was like, that wasn't going to work. Nobody wanted to listen to me. It just like, for whatever reason, people were really skeptical that solar could add value. And so again, like being stubborn, I was like, well, if they're not going to do it, I'll just do it. And so then I went on this journey of trying to figure out, how do you buy apartments? Like, how do you raise the money? How do you identify them? How do you get the debt? Like, had to figure out everything. And so we were buying apartments to install solar on them so that we could, our hypothesis was, if we do it ourselves and solar is accretive to the project level returns, meaning it makes the investment better, then that should be a signal to the industry that everybody should start adopting solar into their investments because it's accretive to the deal. And we ended up buying, I think, about 650 units. And then we started tinkering with the software platform, specifically because we were buying what's called master metered apartments. So it's built like a hotel. There's one electric meter, there's 200 units. The solar is really easy. The asset management of the real estate is really hard because these properties tend to be old. So we wanted to figure out, how do we buy individually metered properties when every apartment unit has its own electric meter? And what we realized really quickly is, if you want to install solar on that type of property, you have to install one small solar system per apartment unit. So 200 unit apartment building gets 200 small solar systems. But then how do you bill the tenants post-installation, and how do you do measurement and verification post-installation? And nothing existed to do that. So in 2023, we built that solution thinking it would help us buy more apartments. And then my partner and I have, again, sort of an honest conversation with ourselves. Are we real estate people, or are we clean tech experts? We're more the clean tech experts. So we thought, let's pivot this idea sort of away from buying our own properties towards helping other multifamily owners deploy it themselves. So it was just, I think sometimes you just need to sit back and reflect on, what am I doing? What's working? What's hard and what's easier? And although I hate to say it, like, follow the easy path. Mm-hmm. And for us, that was solar. It wasn't real estate.
It's so interesting. Thanks for explaining it, right? And as you're speaking, I'm just thinking too, like, kind of how you talk about follow the easy path. I'm curious, were you, being that you're an entrepreneur, were you first starting your business simply for profit? And is that still your main goal? Or do you really have a passion for sustainability and making an impact? Or is it both?
No, I mean, fortunately, financial impact is tied to environmental impact. The more solar I install, the better for the planet, the more money I make. It just happens to be like a direct correlation. I can't work in something that I don't care about. Like, that was painfully obvious in my first job in the finance industry. I really liked Excel. I really liked financial analysis. I literally remember sitting in the stairwell, like, talking to a mentor, a friend of mine. Is this what life is, where you just hate your job for 8 hours a day for the rest of your life? It was I was young. It was like my first job out of college. And I couldn't believe that's what the next 60 years of my life were going to be. And so I just deliberately decided I want to do whatever I can to align my professional life with what I have passions for. And that's, you know, the outdoors, protecting the outdoors. And fortunately, it worked out. I can't say it always works out like that, but it did for me.
Yeah, no, that's so cool. I have a silly question maybe, yet once again, I'm kind of a rookie in this area. Is most of your investment international? Like, or is there a lot of places within the States that are adopting solar right now? Like, is this something that is yes. like niche, or is it like, is it starting to become more common? Because from my mind goes to, where are you doing this in the States? Or is it more like Philippines, or like, you know what I mean?
No.
More international.
Yeah, it's all in the U.S. You know, this could change depending on how Trump's big, beautiful bill plays out. That has a lot of potential repercussions mm-hmm. to the solar industry. But no, I mean, at the end of the day, like, I've been in the clean tech industry for 14 years, I think. I've talked about environmental benefits zero times. I've always talked about money. Always. I'd never bring up the environmental impact of anything unless somebody asks me a question about it. And that's because very early on in my career, I observed that generally the people making decisions don't care about tons of CO2, don't care about trees, don't care about polar bears. But if you can show them how to make more money, they're all ears. So that's just how I've communicated my message, even though it's the purpose is environmental, I've decided to speak the financial piece of it.
Yeah. Well, which is smart though, right? Because at the end of the day, then everybody's getting what they want and you're living out your purpose and your message, right? So it's just the right way to go about doing it. I'm curious because you say, I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, that the problem isn't new technology, it's lack of deployment. Can you explain that in like practical terms for us, what that means?
Yeah, I mean, practically speaking, we have all the existing technology we need to solve climate change. That simple. I'm not saying technological improvements and advancement is not important. I'm just saying within this specific problem of climate change, we have what we need to solve it. The question is, will we deploy it fast enough and at a large enough scale to make a, you know, an impact in emissions? And with Shine, this new company, you know, we were pitching a lot of VCs early on when we were trying to raise money. And it just became kind of abundantly clear that a lot of people are interested in sort of the next shiny technological solution. Even though most people haven't been in the trenches trying to deploy existing tech, mm-hmm. and the bottleneck to solving climate change is in deployment. It's not a new technology. So I feel super strongly that we need to focus on deployment, and I'm always going to have business models that focus on deployment, not developing new tech.
Okay. And so what would be ways that you can speed that up? Like what's getting in the way, and what are ways you're looking at to make that process more scalable and profitable?
Well, so I've always focused on existing buildings. The reason being is of sort of the global greenhouse gas emissions, 40% comes from a built environment. So things that are already built. Another interesting stat is that I think of all the buildings that exist in 100 years, 2/3 of them already exist, right? So if you think about, 40% of the emissions come from the built environment. 2/3 of the built environment that will exist in 100 years already exists, then it seems like the biggest problem or the biggest opportunity in terms of decreasing emissions is to help existing buildings decrease their emissions. There's a lot of companies focused on how do we build new buildings the right way, which is great that we should focus on that. That's a way easier problem to solve. Existing buildings, it gets really complicated in terms of how are you actually going to do it. A lot of times, you take multifamily, it doesn't make financial sense for the owner to replace an inefficient HVAC system with a new one because usually the tenants are paying the heating and cooling bill. It doesn't make sense for the owner to swap out the windows from single pane to double pane because there's no benefit to the owner. But solar's different in that owners can monetize the energy created on site and actually make money from it. And so we've decided to focus on existing multifamily properties. It's a part of the overall built environment, but it's completely untouched from a decarbonization perspective, because until we built our software platform, there was no way to do it. It just didn't exist. And so now we're on this kind of educational campaign about, now you can do it, and it does make you more money, and it is good for the environment. If you have those kind of goals, you don't need to. Either way, it makes owners more money.
This is so interesting. I feel like I'm learning so much. So you, I was reading through your bio, and you said that your Shine vision was to be on track to decarbonize 200,000 units. Are you on track for that?
We are. Yeah. I think by 2030, right? Is that what's in there?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and still that's not really anything. I think there's 8 million apartment units in the US. So
yeah,
like we'd love to get to 200,000. We'd love to get to a million. We're just doing, I mean, honestly, we're trying to show the whole industry what's possible. Mm-hmm. Like you can put solar. So the way that so many multifamily owners and operators think about real estate is, if I put a dollar in, what is that going to translate to in terms of annual cash flow and then like an increase in value when you sell a refi? They think about that in terms of their paint schemes. They think about that in terms of replacing laminate countertops with granite. They think about it in terms of adding dog parks or covered parking. But for some reason, they don't think about their roofs with that same concept. And so what we're trying to get them to think through is, especially in an environment with high interest rates, with sort of flattening rent, you need to get creative about how you create value on your multifamily properties. And by far, every roof space on almost every apartment building in the US is empty. It could be creating income, but it's not. And so we're trying to get owners to sort of rethink how they look at their roofs.
I like how you just shared that. Like, it's almost like it's like another form of real estate within the real estate, right? Like your roof space is empty. And so super smart, because, you know, I'm thinking for a lot of business people, I'm sure there's a mindset that people feel if you got to do something that's about sustainability or saving the planet on a larger scale, it means sacrificing profit. And I love your message, because you're actually sharing, it's actually the opposite. You know, if you're solution oriented and looking and being creative and willing to adopt new ways of doing things. And I think that's really cool. What would you share with people who are listening and entrepreneurs who are listening, just based on what you've learned? I mean, you have a lot of experience, right? And so what have you learned about building a business model that's both profitable and impactful?
I don't share the impact. I keep that as an internal metric. I think especially now, the current administration, like, impact gets a bad spin, ESG gets a bad spin. And so I think, you know, maybe not the message is not keep it internal, but I think be careful about who you share it with, because we don't want that perception of we're a bunch of tree hugging hippies that are doing this to save the planet. Sure, we are. But the value prop to our customers is, here's a way for you to make a lot more money, to make your properties a lot more valuable. And so, unfortunately, you know, climate change, decarbonization has been heavily politicized. And so putting that sort of impact message first can have negative consequences in terms of turning off customers before you even get to chat with them.
Yeah.
So, and we've seen that firsthand, which, you know, is always surprising to me.
I was just going to ask, like, is that, I feel like obviously you've learned that, I think, through being in the trenches, that when you lead with impact, it doesn't quite go the way you want it to.
We had the craziest experience. I'll try and make this a really fast story, but it was a fascinating experience. When we were buying real estate, we had a 235 unit property under contract, and we needed to raise, I think, $7 million in equity. And so we got connected with one of these crowdfunding platforms. I won't say which one. And they were excited about us because we were trying to have high returns, but also incorporate on-site solar. And they were really excited because they had been trying to launch their like green projects platform. So we went back and forth for a while. The project was in Texas. It was in like 2019, which was at the heyday of buying multifamily. It was value add, meaning you buy it with like a business plan of increasing occupancy, like doing renovations, increasing rent. So everything about it fit the mold for this crowdfunding platform. And the returns were, I think it was like a 17% IRR, projected IRR over 5 years. Everyone was just super excited. We put the eco seal like on all the marketing, and we talked for weeks leading up to the launch on their platform. And it was the biggest flop in the company's history in terms of not raising money, to the point where the company actually got hate mail from their investors saying, you guys have like taken sides with climate change. We're never going to invest with you again. And everybody was surprised. No one was expecting it. What's so interesting is that we literally just took the eco stamp off of the project, put out a press release saying Rivian is supposed to open up a production plant like 7 miles from the property, and it funded in like 3 weeks. And wow. So it just showed that, again, like, unfortunately, if something is eco or green or, you know, what, that's the first message that people see, it instantly turns them off. And I just think you don't really know that until it's too late. So we keep that messaging tight to the vest, because it's a great thing for us to think about and celebrate and chat about, but we don't want potential customers like turning us away just because of something that they think about us.
Yeah. You know, your story is so intriguing to me right now. So, and I just have one more question before we move off of this, because this is blowing my mind. So basically what I'm hearing you say is, yes, have goodwill, yet be humble with it. Don't lead with it. Yet, what is the psyche behind that? Like, why is it not effective to lead with the sustainability, or that you're making a difference and an impact in that way? Like, have you put thought into that? What is it about the consumer or the investors where that raises a red flag where they don't want to touch it? Because for me, that is just mind-blowing, actually.
I think it's a couple of things. I think, number one, you instantly lose half the population in America, right? Half of America doesn't believe in climate change. You lead with a message of climate change first, you're going to turn off that half instantly. Number two, I think, you know, it's like that old adage of negative word of mouth travels a lot further than positive word of mouth. I think it's the same idea of like, if you have a negative reaction to something, you're going to be a lot louder about it than if you have a positive one. And so if your messaging and marketing is all climate first, environment first, you're going to piss off a lot of people. And those people are going to be a lot louder than the ones that the messaging actually resonates with. And then I don't have data to support what I'm about to say, but I think if you were to poll wealthy people in America, I think more of them would lean Republican than Democrat. And so Republicans generally lean anti-climate change, anti-climate science. And so you start to lose the investors, the high net worth individuals, potentially. I mean, that's a hunch, but I bet the data would support that.
So interesting. Thanks for sharing. You know, and just such a good message, I think, in business, like, know thy customer. Really know your customer, right? And at the end of the day, you can still be in integrity with yourself, leading, you know, behind the scenes with what and why you're building your business and meeting the customer's needs, so that you can basically get what you want, right? Which is for your business to grow and get solar on all these multi-unit families. And so it's just super cool. Do you have, so just a couple questions to follow up on this, and you touched a little bit on it. So what advice would you have for founders then, or entrepreneurs who want to integrate sustainability into their business model, but don't know where to start? So outside of maybe not leading with it, right? But how do they start to just even integrate sustainability in the first place?
I think you need to decide if you want to deploy capital towards your sustainability goals, or are you trying to do like free sustainability initiatives? Because there's not really that much that you can do if you're not willing to put capital behind it or borrow money to support projects. But, you know, I get really pissed off at our industry because I feel like a lot of time and resources are wasted with like carbon accounting software. You know, like, we're, the real estate industry has this desire to get like perfect information. How is every electron being used at my building so I can report it? And the end result is projects that actually decarbonize are sort of put on the back burner relative to collecting data for reporting. It's not rocket science in terms of how buildings use energy. there's a lighting, there's heating and cooling, and there's plug load generally. That's it. So I think you don't need to spend a bunch of money to figure out how your building is using its energy. I think solar is usually a good candidate for most properties. It kind of depends on where it's located or what the cost of electricity is. But I think the first step is just identify, you know, is this, do we want to set up a recycling program? That's great. That's usually free. Or do we want to invest, you know, hundreds of thousands, millions of dollars to actually decarbonize our properties? Mm-hmm. That's maybe like a more serious conversation where maybe you do have to bring in a consultant or do a little bit more research. But I think the first step is kind of deciding which bucket do you fall into.
Yeah. Okay, cool. And like, and why you're wanting to do it, I think, in the first place too, right? And so speaking to that, I'm curious, you know, if we go back to yourself and your business, what is the ripple effect that you're hoping your business and your work is going to have when it comes to clean energy? Because that is your passion, a big part of it, like you shared. And then on the second note of that, is how can entrepreneurs start to think about their business and making an impact? Do you think it's important? Do you think it's important entrepreneurs have that as piece of the puzzle?
I think it's super important. I think you have so much bridge to put to make impact a part of your like internal goals that I'm kind of upset that more companies don't do it. You know, it doesn't have to be environmental. It could be anything. But I think when you start a business and Tony Robbins talks about how a lot of like wealthy people talk about how they're going to get philanthropic later on in life, like once they've really made their money. And then he says that usually doesn't end up happening because they get to the point where they start to feel like the philanthropy is taking away from their money because it's a change in behavior. And I think the same thing is true for impact in a company. Like if you don't start it very early on, I think it's hard to adopt it later. So I think it should be and can be one of the sort of fundamental principles of any business, regardless of what industry it's in. For us, we're genuinely trying to get one of the largest, oldest, slowest moving industries to rethink how you can add value to a property. And if we're successful, we'll have a massive impact on emissions. If we're not, then we'll feel good that we tried. Maybe it won't work out, but at least we'll feel good that we put a lot of effort into it.
You know what? So cool. What you just shared, though, is really important. You know, that change in behavior. It's kind of like you're talking about right now. You're trying to teach old dog new tricks. And so if you're starting your own business, start out with that habit, you know, to begin with so that, yeah, maybe let's just say, for example, you tithe 10% to something or you want to make an impact somehow. In the beginning, it's small, but as it grows, it's just be normal, right? It's just what you do and who you are, and you don't feel it as you grow and scale. But, you know, I think the cool thing, you know, I don't know you well, but just how you talked about you're stubborn and you love to, like, when somebody tells you it can't be done is how I heard you say that, that you're kind of like, well, watch me, right? I'm going to find a way. And so if you're working with these companies in this industry that is slow to change and you're in there integrating these new ways of doing things, like it's got to take somebody with your grit to be willing to do it. So I guess that would be, you know, in kind of starting to wrap up here, that would be one of the questions I have is like, where do you get that grit from to keep going when you're kind of on this like uphill battle?
I don't know. I think it's a little bit of a trait that you're either given or you're not. I'm not saying you can't learn it, but you know, I've been stubborn my whole life. I've not liked hearing no my whole life. Yeah, I listened to an interesting podcast where they said, everybody hears no, but it's what you do after you hear no that really puts you into two categories. Mm-hmm. Do you hear the no and you're just like, oh, okay, I can't do that? Or do you hear it and you say, well, that doesn't really sound right. Like, let me think about either a different question to ask or another person to ask. Like, let me keep going down this path of what I'm trying to figure out to get the answer that I want to hear. I don't know if that's a developed skill or like an innate skill. I think, you know, if you were to interview my mom, she'd say I was like that my entire life, which does not make for an easy kid to raise. But yeah, I think if you channel that stubbornness the right way, you can have, you know, you can have a really successful life in terms of like changing behavior or just making change in general.
Yeah, so true. I love your answer. Oh, and I'm curious for the people who are listening, you know, we'll put all the information in the show notes so that they can find you. Yet, where can they find you? And then I guess my question is, What can we do to support your mission?
So the website is getshine.com. We have like a contact form on there. The only social media that I'm on is LinkedIn. So Owen Barrett on LinkedIn. And in terms of what you can do, right now we're just on basically an educational campaign, mm-hmm. trying to talk to as many multifamily owners, commercial real estate owners as we can. Not even to pitch them, just to say, look, like the game has changed. There's a new way to think about how to introduce solar or implement solar into your projects and just getting them aware. Our sales cycle is super long. It's like 12 to 18 months. And so we know that it's going to require a lot of conversations with an organization before they're finally ready to adopt. So it's just right now, we're just really looking for introductions so that we can have these conversations and try and get people comfortable with a new way of doing things.
That's awesome. Do you expand into Canada or is this mostly in the US?
Yeah, it's only in the US right now. I think it's just easier. Like we're not licensed anywhere in Canada. Like that's a big part of our business model is having the right electrical licenses so that we can do the work. So maybe down the road, but it's not really on like our near term roadmap.
Yeah, no worries. I mean, once you're getting to that million unit mark or something, you might open up Canada.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, I've never looked into Canada and the policies around solar. So I would be curious what it is.
Yeah, so interesting. That's so cool. The reason, I'll just be transparent, I'll just share it on the podcast. The reason why I was asking is because I come from a family in the trades painting company. So, and we paint all multi-unit.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, we
paint all
construction. Yeah. And so I just have some contacts in that space in Canada. But for those of you who are listening, think of who you know in the States or can connect Owen to, right? And the thing is, 6 degrees of separation is real. Like that idea that if you know somebody who knows somebody, you know, when you start thinking about it, and I love that you just put that out there because you know what? I might not know somebody in Canada, but next week I might come across somebody who for some reason talks about multi-unit in the States, you know, because it's on my mind now, which is really cool. And that's how it works. And it's why I have my podcast. I really want to have people use this as a resource for connection. So that's why I asked the question. So thanks for sharing. And so, okay. So Owen, I have three quick last questions I want to ask kind of rapid fire. Yet, is there anything that you want to make sure you share that we haven't talked about?
No, I mean, I think, you know, just using solar as a metaphor, like we're asking the multifamily industry just to rethink solar. But I think that same sort of thought process like holds true for so many things. There's so many inefficient things that happen because it's the way it's always happened. I think the world needs people to ask why. Why have we always done it that way? And sometimes it's hard and uncomfortable. You know, we need innovation. We need things to change and go the right direction. So I think it's just really important that people don't stop asking why.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, great message. Okay, so question. You, by the way, seem super young for all the things that you've accomplished thus far. Yeah, I'm curious at this stage in your life, what is your definition of success?
I think financial freedom. Just like, fortunately, I hit it early and now I can do whatever I want. I mean, not whatever I want. I can do within reason. And that's like, this business model has taken 8 years to figure out. I could have never done that if I didn't have the financial freedom from an earlier job. So I just think it's the ability to do what you want to do when you want to do it. There's different levels to that, right? Like I don't have a private plane. I can't fly wherever I want to, but I can work on whatever I want to.
Yeah, absolutely. Which is cool. Or hit the slopes with your kids, right? On a Tuesday afternoon.
Yeah, take the day off, go skiing, powder day. Put out the out of office. I mean, that's gonna happen a lot this way. People are sorry, it's dumping out here in Park City. Like I'm not doing work today.
Exactly. That's fair. Cool. Okay, next question. What would three tips be you would give someone to unleash their inner greatness?
Three tips. Get comfortable with no. Just hearing no. I think especially like young kids today, they don't get a lot of rejection. And I don't think that's gonna lead anywhere good. Learn how to sell. Those two are kind of related, but a little bit different. And then I wish someone had told me in college, I was so obsessed with getting good grades that my social life took a hit. And I wish someone had told me, like, grades are not that important, but the relationships that you develop in college are probably going to be more important. And so I'm not saying don't do good in school, but just remember how important networking is and the connections that you build. Like, you have no idea where they're going to lead 5-10 years from now.
So true. It's like that book, I think it's by Darren Hardy. He's like, it's who, not how, right? Like,
yeah.
It's
who. Well, 100%.
Always who. Cool. Okay, last question. If we were going to share a call to action to the audience from our message today, what would one thing be you would guide them to do when they hop off this episode?
I think everybody has the ability to, you know, have some level of impact in the fight against climate change. Ride your bike a little bit more, eat a little bit less meat, buy local produce. I mean, there's so many different ways that you can do it. So I just like thinking through that lens, if everybody just did a little bit or did something that had a little bit of an impact, you know, that the result would be a large impact.
Yeah, no doubt. Awesome, everybody. So do your part. Owen, thanks for just being here and sharing your message. And I think your business model is just really cool. It's very thought provoking to think about all of this stuff and just not put my head in the sand, and just learning lots about who you are and what you're up to and just how I can implement some of this stuff, obviously not at the scale you're doing and with solar, but to what I've got going on in my business. So just thanks. I think for your message today, one of the big messages is just how you started the call, which is just not coming from a mindset of like, we have to do things the way we've always done them, right? And when we open our mindset up to doing things differently, that's really where the magic can happen. We can learn things, you know, and apply things that we might not have ever thought of before. Just really appreciate you. And just thanks for being here today.
Yeah. Thanks for having me. It was fun.
Awesome. Go hit the slopes. Actually, maybe you're going to just really quickly, now that it's turning nice, you don't hit the slopes. Do you do the bike ride up and down? Cause I think you can do that.
You can. I rock climb. That's the main reason I moved to Utah, is to climb.
Okay. We'll get out there and climb then.
Yeah. Thanks. I will.
Cool. Thanks, Owen.
Hi, I'm Tanya and this is Julie, and we are the founders of Coach Corp, your all-in-one solution for building and scaling a successful coaching business.
At Coach Corp, we provide you with everything you need in one place. You can house your courses, manage memberships, run email campaigns, and create stunning websites and funnels, all with our easy-to-use platform.
And it's not just about the software. We offer built-in coaching and mentorship, helping you implement best practices from certified NLP practitioners and story brand coaches. And that's just scratching the surface of what's inside.
And that's why we're excited to sponsor the Entrepreneurial Elevation podcast with Kelly Beveridge. Kelly is a thought leader who inspires and elevates entrepreneurs worldwide.
We believe in the power of community and continuous learning, and this podcast is a fantastic resource for any coach looking to truly grow their practice.
So join us on this journey. Tune into the Entrepreneurial Elevation podcast for insights and inspiration, and visit Coach Corp to transform your coaching business today.
Coach Corp, your path to coaching success.